Welcome back to Pep Talk, News Radio Pensacola. Informative, local, dependable, 92.3, 95.3, AM 1620. And, of course, we are on the app. If you'd like to text our next guest, 850-437-1620, we'll certainly be happy to take your questions as well. We are joined in the studio by Robert Bender, our current supervisor of elections. Robert is actually pretty relatively new. Let's call it somewhat new to the post. You'd certainly been a county commissioner prior to this. So what's that transition been like from being a commissioner to the supervisor of elections?
I would say the experience that I had has definitely helped prepare me for this role. I was able to be on the canvassing board in 2020, so the last presidential election gave me the opportunity to work in election, especially under David Stafford, learn all those processes of what goes into to receiving everyone's ballots and making sure their votes get counted. And it was interesting to me. It was something I enjoyed doing, and that's what led me to put in for the appointment and get appointed in January. So it's you follow the laws and the codes and statutes, but then there's also an operation side to it, which also plays into my background. We're preparing 72 sites, 80 precincts for election day, make sure those are up and running at 7 a.m. and that everyone can get out and vote. And so there's a lot more to it than just looking at the statutes and applying the law.
Yeah. So any lessons that you've learned early on in your tenure with this position?
No, I mean, you just learn things that you want to do better. But other than that, it's of course, David Stafford had done a great job running the office. And so it's taking that and maybe taking it a little bit to the next level. There were some things that we've implemented that I would say he didn't really have the opportunity to, because it was new software that he hadn't run an election with a new software yet, things like that. Mm-hmm. But he definitely set us up for success, and we're just taking that flag and running with it.
That is awesome. So I understand that you're actually still kind of working on the primary a little bit, and certification is happening next. So tell us a little bit about that.
We did. We had our first unofficial results last Thursday evening. Those are when we processed those provisional ballots that people had when they vote, either early voted or election day. They have until 5 o'clock on that Thursday to get us additional information. If they have a cure ballot that needs to be done, so those are vote by mail ballots that come in and the signature doesn't quite match, or they forgot to sign it, something like that. There's now a process in place that allows them to cure it. They sign an affidavit that says, yes, that's me, count my vote. And if we get those in by 5 p.m. on Thursday, then we can process those. So we wait for after 5 p.m. on Thursday. And then we look at all those and open the provisionals if they're accepted and tabulate them and count them, and then send the state our first unofficial results. So we've done that. Tomorrow will be the official results, and then we'll do the audit of the election.
Wonderful. And let's talk about the primary a little bit. What was turnout like? Was it kind of where you expected it to be?
Sure. Turnout was a little bit lower than what we had seen in the past. We had about 24% turnout, down from the 2022 primary, which was at 29, and even down, I think, from 2020. I'd say election day got off to a slow start. But after about 3:30, everyone started heading to the polls, and we had a really strong afternoon to finish up a little over 19,000 Election Day voters. Mm-hmm. Compared to our 15,000 that we saw for early vote. So it was, again, as we had seen in 2022, the Election Day is the most ways that people go out and vote, but all in all, they're all almost distributed equally. At about 30% each.
So in terms of the later turnout, what do you think contributes to later turnout? Is it maybe fewer choices on the ballot to vote for, or is it the lack of a hot topic, or what do you think contributed to that?
When you don't see some of these more contested state races, that's not driving the people out. We did have a couple local races, and I think when I look in those numbers, we'll see that those districts probably turned out a little bit higher than the ones that didn't have it. Mm-hmm. It just, some people just don't vote in a primary. I mean, this is, we saw about 35%, I think, and is usually what we say is our historical average. But you look at the gubernatorial years, you see about 50% turnout. Mm-hmm. Which are these off cycle years, but the presidential, you'll see mid 70s to even a low 80s turnout. And, so we'll see if that holds true. I'm it's definitely going to be a lot more than what we've had in the last couple of years.
Mm-hmm. Well, and obviously the general election is just around the corner. What are you working on related to that?
So for the first thing we're going to start doing is start laying out the ballot for November. We have a couple of things we're working on. We have the constitutional amendments, those six amendments. The language just came out for those. Locally, we'll have the half-cent sales tax for the school board that we need to finalize the wording on that. And then also Century looks like they may have some charter amendments that they want the voters of Century to vote on. Mm-hmm. So we're going to lay that out. Our hope, our goal is to keep it a one-page front and back ballot. That makes things a lot easier. So we're going to start looking at that. You know, we have very specific guidelines in how we lay out the ballot. And so that, you know, I was actually talking about this morning with one of our people that, you know, if you take away the header, pretty much everything below that should look the same. Mm-hmm. And that's, I think that's great the way Florida does it. And so we'll start putting that in. Of course, we have different things we can do. You know, we may be able to do a two-column on the back, which might give us a little bit more room as opposed to three column, because you lose some of that dead space that might be created with the third column, and maybe that means that we can fit everything on the ballot. But of course, it will also depend on how many candidates for president actually end up filing with the state and make it on the ballot as well, because you know usually you have a lot of those minor parties and things like that, so you may end up with mm-hmm. with 10, 12 people on the ballot for president.
Well, actually, that leads to an interesting question. So RFK Jr. just dropped out, for example, but I know that he's been very active trying to get himself on the ballot in places. I'm not sure if he was able to make it on the ballot in Florida. Would his name still be there, or given the fact that he's dropped out now, would he just be off the ballot? And
It would depend on what he's done with the state. Okay. Honestly, you know, and I think when we had a call last week, there were maybe like five that had already submitted to the state. Mm-hmm. If that window is still open, he could go back in and withdraw from that. So it's not until that's finalized. But once we set up our ballot, you know, we have the runoff race for District 4 school board. So no one got more than 50% plus one of the votes in that race. So the top two, Rich Holtz Connect and Carissa Bergosh, will run off, face off each other. We have a couple other little races, local races like that. So we'll start laying those out. But we send it over to the state. They have a week to approve it, and then you know, we have to start sending out our UACAVA, which are our military overseas ballots, mm-hmm. By September 20th. So we have to print those ballots and put them all in the envelopes to send out to everybody, and so we have a quick turnaround. You know, in August, or for this August election, we had about 2,500 military UACAVA ballots that we sent out, mm-hmm. Which is one of the largest in the country, actually. We have another 600 that we email. But then for the domestic, which is everyone that's not overseas or military, we had over 20,000 that we had sent as our initial run. So we get those out starting on September 26th. We have a week to drop those mm-hmm. From the 26th. We try to get as close to the 26th as possible. And so we have a lot of things to do between now and then.
Mm-hmm. Wonderful. Well, Robert Bender, Supervisor of Elections, is our guest today on Pep Talk. We will be taking a short break here, coming right back. Again, News Radio Pensacola, 92.3, 95.3, AM 1620, and on the app. If you have any questions, 850-437-1620. We'll be back after this. Welcome back to Pep Talk, News Radio Pensacola. Informative, local, dependable, 92.3, 95.3, AM 1620. If you have any questions for our guest, 850-437-1620. Feel free to text us with a question for him. Robert Bender, Supervisor of Elections, is our special guest today. So we were just talking a little bit about the primary once again. And did you encounter any issues during the primary at all?
We didn't. We had a machine not boot. These are new equipment, and a little bit of a known issue that we thought we had resolved. But we have an emergency bin that voters can place their ballot into. Securely, and then once the machine gets swapped out, then members from two different party of our poll working staff goes over and feeds it in to make sure they get counted. So we had one of those happen in March as well, but it's stuff that we include in our report to the state, and so we'll get it fixed and have them come in and service those and get them done before November. But you know, we were also talking about the audit that we do previously. We would audit one race from two precincts by hand to make sure that those numbers match. We now have an automated recount where we run every ballot through an independent system other than our tabulators. It's called Clear Ballot. It scans the ballots and tabulates the results, and then we compare those to the ones that we got from the machines that we ran the vote by mail through, the early vote and the election day. And we compare 100% of the precincts and 100% of the races. Mm-hmm. And so if there's any discrepancy in that, then we figure out why.
So it looks like there's a lot of attention to accuracy in elections, and that kind of plays to some of the narratives that you might hear candidates talking about in terms of, like, how can I know that my vote really was counted? You know, and people talk on election day about, you know, that there might be fraud or not fraud or whatever. So, I mean, again, it sounds like you're doing your due diligence at the county level to make sure that everything's on the up and up.
We do. I'd definitely say that the other 66 supervisors across the state all share that same commitment to the voters of Florida, what the voters of Florida have come to expect. And, you know, if we're one vote off, we want to know why. Mm-hmm. We're going to research it. We're going to find out why it happened. Our poll workers are great. They end up taking a lot of notes throughout the day. So if there is an issue where, you know, we actually did have one where the ballot had been counted but then got jammed, and so when they went to grab it, they ended up running it through again. Mm. That happened in one precinct. And so they let us know that, and so then when we go to reconcile everything, then we know why we had one extra vote at that precinct. But then in the audit, it came back that we had one fewer because we didn't run the ballot through twice. So all things like that we take into account. I mean, we do have humans that are helping us, and that's the thing, is that they do tend to make mistakes. I mean, we train them before every election. Listen, I couldn't do it without the poll workers. They're great. We have 550, 600 poll workers that come out on election day to help an election run, and so we're very thankful for them. They do a great job. But again, it's not something they do every day, and sometimes little things like that happen. But again, nothing that would influence the outcome of an election.
Oh, wonderful. So I know you wanted to talk a little bit about the early voting dates. What should people know about that?
Sure. So Monday, October 21st is the first day of early voting for the November general election. Early voting sites will be open from 7 a.m. to 7 p.m., and it'll be for 13 days. So in this last one, we ran up for 8 days. So it'll be from Monday to the following Saturday, 7 a.m. to 7 p.m., and then the general election day, November 5th, which you'd have to go vote at your precinct.
Okay, wonderful. And if people want to get more information on how to early vote or whatever, do they contact your office? Is there a website they go to?
Yes, escambiavotes.gov. So we've paid a little extra and done our due diligence to get that .gov domain, so you can trust the information that's coming off of it. But if you need to do a vote by mail request, we can do that. If you need to update your address or register to vote, you can do that through our website. You can also call and have us help you any way you'd like. That phone number is 850-595-3900.
Wonderful. Well, Robert Bender is our guest again, Supervisor of Elections for Escambia County. We really appreciate you joining us today. We have about a minute left until the next break, so is there anything that you want to leave our listeners with?
I would just say, get out and vote. That's what we want people to do, is get out and vote. That's how your voice gets heard. That you know, doesn't necessarily matter who you vote for, but if you want someone else to control the narrative or control the direction of the county or the city or the state country, then you lose your right to have your voice be heard if you don't vote. So mm-hmm. Again, I think we'll have a strong turnout in November. Hopefully, hit that 80% mark. And again, I think it'll go as smooth as it did last week.
And if anybody has an interest in being a poll worker, where do they go for that?
Sure, you can go to our website. We have it up there. It's under employment opportunities. And again, we'll start getting those trainings going and things that are required by the state to be a poll worker. But the first thing would be to put in an application on our website.
Wonderful. Robert Bender, again, Supervisor of Elections for Escambia County. We thank you so much for joining us today. This is Pep Talk, News Radio Pensacola, informative, local, dependable. Again, we'll be back with more Pep Talk, 850-437-1620, if you'd like to reach out to us today. Again, thanks for listening to News Talk Radio. And Robert Bender, thank you so much for being here.
Appreciate it. Thanks so much.
Attention.
Welcome back once again to Pep Talk, News Radio Pensacola. If you have any questions for our guest today, 850-437-1620. Feel free to text us on the text line. Robert Bender, Supervisor of Elections, is our guest. Thank you once again for being here, Robert.
Happy to be here. Thank you so much.
All right. So we were talking a little bit more about poll workers and what that takes. Do you actually have to be a resident to be a poll worker?
You do. You have to be a resident of the county that you're working in. and a registered voter to do that. So we do have all of our poll workers do that. And, of course, we always have to remind them that they may not be working at their precinct on election day, so they need to either early vote or vote by mail to make sure that they can vote in the election.
Mm-hmm.
But we're also talking about the logic and accuracy test that we do. It is something that we do to test a portion of our equipment to make sure that, as I say, the vote for candidate A is read as a vote for candidate A, and that it doesn't drop to candidate B. I'd say you'd question that, but it's happened before, not necessarily here, but somewhere around the state. And so we pull out 10 machines and run the sample ballots through there and again, make sure that the number of votes that we've put on those ballots is what the machine comes out with, so that way we know that it's reading them properly. And so that'll be open to the public. We haven't set it yet. We'll probably set it in the next couple of days. But it'll be that first week in October, and the public's welcome to come watch how we do that. We actually had two candidates and WEAR come with us to the one that we had for the August primary, and we were able to step them through that process on how the ballots are read. We actually had something this year where for vote by mail, we put a V on the ballot that if you try to put that through the tabulator in an early vote site or election day site, it wouldn't read it. It would just kick it back out, so someone couldn't bring a ballot in and try to feed that in. Just some of those extra layers of security that we've put in place. So we were able to demonstrate those to everyone, and I think everyone left with a better understanding, but also a reassurance of the safety and security of our election system process.
Mm-hmm. So it sounds like there's a strong commitment to transparency at Escambia County.
That is one of the things that we pride ourselves on. That's how you make people trust the elections, right? So we have an observation room with windows that everyone can see what we're doing as we're canvassing the vote by mail ballots, and then a camera at watching them get tabulated. So transparency is definitely one of the things that we pride ourselves on and being open.
Mm-hmm. Well, again, that's absolutely wonderful, and it certainly hopefully gives voters a sense of ease as they go into the polls on election day. So,
I think so. And again, I'd say that it's no mistake that Florida is the gold standard in elections. It's the changes that they've made, the statute, and the money they've put behind it after 2000. So, I think that's what they've come to expect.
Absolutely, Robert Bender, again, Supervisor of Elections, was our guest today on Pep Talk. Thank you again for being here.
Thank you so much.